Hi! Welcome to a new episode of Slap the Chicken. Today's show is about flight and it is proudly sponsored by Dodo Airways. They tell me that a payment will be negotiated after the episode is broadcast, but I'm so excited. They should give us enough money to keep the electricity on in the new studio for another month. Time to launch this episode off the ground and into the nearest skip. In-flight snacks will be provided by yourselves, I'm not the DWP, and emergency exits can be found here, 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 and I'm sure there was another one over here somewhere. Hang on. Yes, there we go. Here. Masks will drop down from your ceiling in the event of a drop in oxygen, kindly provided by the flat above you, the mice that live in your attic, or if you're listening in outside, God. Have a safe flight. Woo! To get this episode heading to the stars, we will start with a creature that, according to all known laws of aviation, should not be able to fly. Bees, anyone? A quick heads up that this section is only audible if you are less than 3 meters away from Beeston. Woo! So I'll give you a short interlude to walk there. Yes, walk. Dodo Airways are covering my travel costs only. Chip chop. Appeared at some point during the Cretaceous period, living alongside dinosaurs and pollinating flowering plants, which had only just evolved. This means that they survived the extinction of the dinosaurs, meaning anyone trying to confront them with a rolled-up newspaper is a fool. Bees can be found preserved beautifully in amber, which is fossilised tree resin that the bee fell into. Fossils are hard to find of bees, but it's suspected that bees evolved when certain wasps decided to stop eating meat. Today, there are roughly 25,000 bee species and none of them will fulfil your bee movie fantasy. This is because most of them are solitary, laying their eggs in little tunnels which they dig out themselves. Some of these tunnels are shared between several females. The bee present in the United Kingdom is part of a genus which can regulate the internal temperature of their hive, meaning that unlike other bees, these can live in cooler climates. To incubate the baby bees, the hive is kept at 35 degrees. How though? Well, there's bees in the hive called heater bees, which either press their thorax up to the window of the cell that the baby bee is in, or just sit and be hot in one of the nearby empty cells. The hot bees can stay in front of the baby bee for about 30 minutes, whilst the other bees crowd around to stop the heat dissipating too much. It's very important to keep the baby bees warm because temperature changes in the hive can lead to them not developing properly. Half a degree can mean a bee with more vulnerability to pesticides. How a bee flies is a more complicated question than you would expect. The wings can twist and pivot to create little vortices of air at the edge of the wings. These vortices are like tiny tornadoes of air, giving me a great idea for a giant bee disaster movie. Their purpose is to effectively stop the bee's motor from cutting out, take the vortices away, and the bee will just stop and fall out the sky. Which is very sad and not funny. The vortices also allowed the bee to angle its wing higher. The higher wing angle means better airflow over the wing, meaning the bee has more lift and can stay in the air. Now, what is a good animal without an arch nemesis? As the ant has the anteater and the human has the photocopier, the bee has the bee-eater. There are 27 species of bee eater who gets rid of the sting and the venom by whacking the bee on a stone until the stinger falls off and all of the venom falls out. Fossils of bee eaters have been dated back to the most recent ice age, although other things could have eaten bees before that. Disclaimer, it is at this point in the podcast that I would like to make a formal apology. I posed a quiz question to you on the Instagram stories in which I asked you, what do ants taste like? I indicated that the correct answer was dirt. Three of you answered aniseed, and both of those were wrong. The correct answer is in fact citrus, due to the formic acid inside them. My source on this is a close human contact who shall remain anonymous. Time to move on to... Sorry, everyone, the lights just flickered. I guess there may have been a mistake with the electricity payments. Let's get some money out of Dodo Airways whilst we still can, as we talk about balloons and airships. Disclaimer. Dodo Airways inform me that these transportation methods provide no comparison to their five-star flights, with guaranteed replacement bus service if there happens to be a whoopsie during your journey. At least you don't have to listen to that Jess Glynn song 90,000 times like you do on certain other airlines. Temperature and pressure of a gas are related to the volume it occupies in such a way that an increase in temperature at constant pressure means an increase in volume. An increase in volume means that the air in the balloon is less dense than surrounding air, and this means that the balloon floats. By adjusting the burners, you can exercise some control over the balloon, but the wind may get the better of you. The first hot air balloon was made by the Montgolfier brothers and took flight on the 4th of June 1783. It was a silk affair lined with paper measuring 10 metres in diameter. This is the same length as the world's longest snake, found in Indonesia around 129 years later in 1912. Wow! Talking of animals, whilst the first flight was unmanned, the second balloon had some very special passengers. The first was a duck who was chosen as a control specimen because it was used to flying. The second was a chicken because the Montgolfier brothers had excellent taste and it was a little bit less used to flying than the duck. Lastly, there was a sheep, chosen because it doesn't fly and has a similar anatomy to a person, if you squint hard enough. 1 month later, the brothers decided to put an actual person in the balloon. That person was a French teacher of chemistry and physics who wasn't like a sheep at all. 2 years later, this man had gone up in the world. Gone up in flames, that is. His very own hydrogen balloon has exploded over the English Channel. R.I.P. So, when you have a large bag of highly flammable gas that must float and is almost uncontrollable, what do? You attach a steam engine to it, of course. This is what Henri Giffard did in 1852 when he made the first powered airship. The steam engine was suspended in a, frankly, terrifying-looking arrangement far below the cigar-shaped hydrogen balloon, with the hot exhaust gases diverted away from the balloon to avoid a massive catastrophe. The balloon could thunder along at a blistering 6 miles an hour, doing 17 miles in 3 hours on its first flight. This is a bit faster than walking, but at least on foot you can get back to where you came from. Givard couldn't, because the steam engine wasn't powerful enough to go in the opposite direction to the wind. I'd like to take a moment to ask, like, what have men ever been doing? Right, so the ship floats because the hydrogen inside is less dense than air. This is the same reason that helium balloons float, because helium is also less dense than air. It is worth noting that helium is a noble gas and as such extremely unreactive, unlike hydrogen, which blows up. The passengers of the Hindenburg discovered hydrogen's ability to catch fire for about the millionth time on the 3rd of May 1937. The German airship was attempting to land at the Navy base at Lakehurst, New Jersey, having crossed the Atlantic. The hydrogen within ignited, killing 13 passengers, 21 crew members, and someone on the ground. At least their death happened before they had to see too much of New Jersey. Airships fell out of fashion shortly after that, and I can't really imagine why. On that wonderful note, we need to move on. So far, we have been dealing with flying objects that you can readily identify if you have your glasses on. However, some say that the truth is out there, so we're going to go full tin for a hat and have a look at something a little more shapeless, a little more unidentifiable. Yes, we're investigating UFOs on a science podcast. I know it's been very, very serious so far, so you might be surprised at this, but we're going to have to go there. Just a quick update with the sponsor money. Dodo Airways, they assure me that the money will be paid directly to my bank account in due course, so I've given them my bank details and I'm hoping they'll take it from there. Gosh, these lights are on the way out.
Audio Jungle Audio Music.
It's going again. Reports of unidentified flying objects in the sky have been written down since Roman times. Mysterious and strange, such as the José Bonilla observation on the 12th of August 1883. At the Zacatecas Observatory in Mexico, José Bonilla saw around 300 UFOs pass in front of the sun whilst he was taking pictures of sunspots. These were either pieces of debris from a billion-ton comet or the appearance of an extant soulless alien life form known locally as Los Gansos. G-A-N-S-O-S, if you want to pop that in Google Translate. Or perhaps a UFO such as the silver lizard that appeared in the skies over Slovakia in 1668. But what can these be? Are they really aliens? Several UFO sightings report round fiery objects in the sky. Presuming that they're not looking at the sun, these may be a rare type of lightning called ball lightning. This doesn't help much, because identifying something as ball lightning takes it from a UFO to a BIFO, a barely identifiable flying object. Ball lightning takes the form of slow-moving balls of lightning, sometimes small enough to come through a window, as some reports have claimed. These events are so rare and rapid that it's been extremely hard to study. There is even a theory that the strong magnetic fields present during a violent thunderstorm may induce hallucinations taking on the form of flashing lights and floating balls. This is claimed to be the cause of up to half of ball lightning sightings. Other sightings have been associated with earthquakes. It is believed that some rocks have an electrical discharge when a seismic wave passes through them, explaining the times when lightning is seen coming from the ground. If you spot lightning coming from the ground during a thunderstorm, then this may be St. Elmo's fire. This is not lightning, but something far cooler. It's when the ground is charged and the air around it is carrying a voltage high enough to tear the air molecules apart. When I say tearing apart, I mean that the protons and electrons that make up the molecule's atoms are separated from each other by about 30,000 volts per cubic centimetre. When the air gets turned into a soup of protons and electrons, this is a state of matter known as a plasma, which glows under what light of the sun or moon there is at the time. Although it's unlikely that there exists intelligent life capable of flying towards the Earth and terrorising the West Midlands as the Dudley Dorito did between 2007 and 2011, microbial life forms may exist somewhere out there in the universe. The job of finding any life has been taken up by the SETI Institute, whose research focuses on the search for extraterrestrial intelligence. A recent sign of hope comes from a paper published in Nature on the 26th of July of this year, which says that spectral images of Jupiter's moon Ganymede have been analysed and appear to show that there is water in Ganymede's atmosphere. The European Space Agency are planning to send a craft to observe Jupiter and three large moons, including Ganymede, in 2022, so we may have some answers as to whether these moons could support life. Don't get too excited, though. The craft is going to take 7 years to even arrive at Jupiter. Maybe we'll still remember each other then. Well, I'm not too sure that aliens are interested in us at any rate. Why on earth would they bother coming here? Hello? You've come to switch the electricity off. No, please, I'm going to pay it. Just as soon as you... Fine. You win. Wait. What was that about demolition plans? Podcasting by candlelight. Who'd have thought, eh? Time to transfer some money so that the energy company will at least give me some lighting next month. Hang on. I wonder if the sponsor money's been, my balance has gone down. That's interesting. Maybe I should get a proper job. Like working in a kitchen. There'll be plenty of science which I absolutely must talk to you about in there, right? Well, you'll find out about that next month. Right, I'll get my coat. We're going down to the job centre. And I'll be there for about a month. And then I'll be seeing you again. Bye! It's my Okay. My scrunk is like a red spleen, moist and crusty with pustules of green. The scrunk of milky Saturn's clunge is where I want to deftly plunge. Thank you.